Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite transatlantic football podcast. Although it's not transatlantic this week, both of us on either side of the United States of America. I'm Jack Collins, and I'll be your host live from the SiriusXM studios here in Miami. And I'm joined by the one and only Mr. Dean Jones from San Diego. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, live from my son's bedroom. Yeah, a bit different. Good, mate. Yeah. A ranks first, I think, of us both being in America and not actually together. Obviously, we did do shows once upon a time together from America in the old days, the good old days. But yeah, over on Ranks, mate, happy to have you over here. You enjoying it? How's America treating you so far?
It's very hot. Like, I know it was always going to be hot, but it is really hot. The sun feels closer, and I know, like, you're closer to the equator and all those things, but it just feels like, even though the temperature isn't necessarily that much higher than actually what it has been in London, it's been sort of 32, 33 in London in the heat wave in Celsius. It's sort of 36, 35 here, but it feels so much hotter than that. Like, it's like 10 minutes in the sun, you come back and I'm like, I'm gonna have to reapply the sun cream. So there's the tropical storms. I'm having a great time watching every game, going around different groups of fans. I was with the Brazilians for their knockout loss. We're obviously going to talk about them over the course of this podcast. I was there watching the England game with a load of different people. Again, you know, their win over Mexico, which was celebrated by you massively on the Patreon. I thought it was a wonderful episode. And then also, you know, being with the Argentine fans yesterday, being with the US fans for their incredibly disappointing performance. Again, someone we'll talk about. And then Colombia last night as well. So being around and just sort of being around all the fan groups has been really quite special. I've absolutely loved it.
Oh, good, mate. Good. I'm glad you said. I mean, your teams haven't been doing that well, have they? I mean, you had a pretty bad starting record, didn't you, to the teams you actually wanted to win or losing?
It wasn't even wanted to win. It was just like, you know, the teams, I was like, let's get involved with the fan base, right? So like we arrived and then there was a massive Brazilian watch party that Pete, who was staying with, his wife's Brazilian. So he was like, we'll all go to this thing. It's where Inter Miami watch parties happen. It was an amazing bar. We come straight off the plane. So in there, so I was obviously like, oh, I'm amongst it. I was amongst it with the US fans, amongst it with the Argentina fans, amongst it with the Colombia fans. It's not been a particularly brilliant record, but like when you're among those fan bases, you want them to do well, right? Like you obviously want them to be able to party, you want to celebrate that with them. And we got a bit of that with the Argentina fans yesterday, but for the most part, yeah, it's not been a particularly impressive record of teams, of being amongst the fan base and seeing them actually celebrate.
Yeah, totally. I know what you mean. I had it earlier on in the tournament. I talked about it with Ecuador and a couple of other teams that I ended up being in bars with. It was fun. But mate, we should start with Argentina. I mean, today we're going to talk about teams that have been an absolute letdown, players that have been let down. But we should just quickly start with Argentina, the team that are getting away with it to some extent. Twice now they've been close to going out of this tournament. Obviously, they were close to going out of the tournament last time in the World Cup and ended up winning it. That was in the group stages and they hit their stride in the knockouts. Not quite happening that way so far, but they are showing traits that do get you over the line. Obviously, Cape Verde game and now against Egypt with a stunning comeback, it has to be called. Extremely harsh on Egypt. I'm sorry to anyone Egyptian that listens to this pod who is still going to be feeling so sad about the circumstances around it. I mean, my kids were very sad because they want the easiest pathway possible for England to the final. And even though they love Messi, they were cheering. One of the neighbours actually texted Taylor during the game. She was like, this is so funny because your TV is a second ahead of mine. And all I hear is your kids screaming every time something happens against Argentina. But ultimately, this house has left very quiet because Argentina did manage to get over the line with that Enzo header. I'm glad I wasn't among Argentine fans, mate. But what was that like?
I mean, it was incredible, right? It's obviously nice to be amongst a kind of party, but it was a really kind of enjoyable, really open, really happy atmosphere. Even, you know, at 2-0 down, there was a kind of a sense of expectation that something was going to happen, I think, which is, you know, I've been banging that drum, you know, ever since the kind of start of this tournament, that I don't think Argentina are the best team at this World Cup, but good luck getting past them, like good luck beating them. And we've seen that twice, right? They haven't been particularly good in either knockout stage game. It's a bit like the reverse of the last World Cup in some regards, in that actually they were very good in the group stages. And since then, they found ways to win, but I don't think we've seen anything near the Argentine best. But yet, they find themselves in the quarterfinals. They find themselves against Switzerland, which I think is going to be a difficult game for them, just in terms of the Swiss being
so
comfortable with who they are. But I mean, look, it's a funny one. I was talking to a couple of people today. We were speaking to Tony Foki, who covers African football for TalkSport and Give Me Sport, and a couple of others. And we kind of came to the same conclusion when we were discussing it, and that both of us feel incredibly sorry for Egypt in terms of the goal that was disallowed. Now, I'm not necessarily frustrated about the fact that it's a foul. I think it is a foul. It just felt far too far back for me to
way
ball
too
back.
Far back.
But equally, right. You know, I can see the argument that without that tackle, none of the counter happens. You know, it
no,
is
I get
only
it,
about
but, you know,
15
how far
seconds.
Do you start taking it? That's the problem you start to be drawn up. Like, if the ref didn't give that foul then, and so much time, you know, six players have had the chance to tackle him basically on the way to it getting to the other end of the field, and they haven't managed to do it. And I don't know, it's a frustrating part of the VAR rule.
I agree, but I think the thing that's interesting is that that goal happens at 1-0, right? If that goal happens at 2-0, I think we're having a slightly different conversation about where this is, because Egypt go and score the second goal 5-10 minutes later anyway, right? And at that moment, you're like, wow, surely they don't lose it from here. Surely this is the moment that they take this and carry it home. And actually, I thought that at 2-0, Egypt were playing a very different game, right? They stopped having any transitional threat. They concede one. They try to kind of jam it up. They try and kind of make the Red Sea in front of this Argentine attack. And they don't have Moses, but they do have Messi, right? And he's the man that parts the Red Sea for the equalizer. And I think that, you know, you can kind of have two things on this. One is that Egypt are deeply unlucky. And I think that we talk about kind of innate biases in refereeing all the time. I think that that's as true of this World Cup as it is with anything else. So we talk about innate biases in Premier League refereeing with the Big Six, right? It doesn't mean that there's one giant conspiracy theory or anything like that. I just think that referees tend to give more decisions to the bigger clubs. I think we're seeing something happen that's very similar at this World Cup. You're seeing, you know, the bigger nations get decisions. Does that goal get ruled out if it's Argentina that score it? I don't know, but I'd be skeptical. Right. And I think that it's fine to kind of look at it in two different ways. Equally, if Egypt had, you know, had a third goal disallowed and then they end up losing the game 3-2, that's a different conversation that I think that we're having. And the fact that they did effectively implode after a brilliant 80 minutes, what it's worth, but they effectively kind of sit in on themselves. They invite Argentina on. If you do that, you're inviting trouble, especially if you're not really showing any threat going the other way. And I think it's two different conversations. That one, yes, Egypt can feel aggrieved, but I too would probably be looking for things to blame if I'd just thrown away a two-goal lead with 10 minutes left in a World Cup game to reach a quarterfinal. And I think that there's a little bit of that happening at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an impossible situation for them to manage, though. I mean, once that first goal for Argentina goes in, I was like, damn it. Like, that's it. This sparks something. You just know that the Argentine mentality, the support from within that stadium is going to bring at least an equaliser. Like, I personally thought, oh, this is it. We're going to extra time now. And I don't blame Egypt for being sucked back, because it's just your natural instinct, isn't it? You're not going to play front-footed football with 10 minutes left. Like, you just got to try to survive, try to stay in that game. It's really difficult to manage, and they're unlucky. And Argentina, even though they are lucky. They are lucky to still be in this tournament. But equally, this is why they're champions. This is what champions do. And that was an unbelievable end to the game. And I can't really say that they don't deserve to be in the tournament, because they have ultimately you have an amount
way,
of time.
Right?
You have an amount of time to get a game won, and they did it within that time frame. So did they make life hard for themselves? Yes. Do they look totally convincing? No. Am I as scared of facing Argentina in a semi-final as I might have been previously after watching the last two knockout games? Probably no. But ultimately, they've still got this mentality that very few teams are showing in this tournament.
we've praised England's resilience, right? You know, in that game at the Azteca, we've praised it in terms of turning the game around against DR Congo. I think if you're going to praise that, you've got to praise the resilience of this side as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I think that's probably where we're at. I did want, just before we take a break, and then we'll get into the kind of main element of this podcast when we come back, but I wanted to read out something from a longtime friend of the pod, Yusuf Wali, who is an Egyptian, to kind of get a different perspective that perhaps you and I, you know, can't necessarily, you know, look at it in the same way. And Yusuf said, "I'm Egyptian, but I'm not crying. My head is held high. Of course, the Egyptians feel hard done by. The brave, brave pharaohs did everyone proud. Let's be real about what happened. Egypt played unbelievably well and shocked the world. Argentina honestly didn't play that well. They relied on their tactics more than their effort for most of the game. Then in the last 15 minutes, we caught the African flu of the tournament and just ran out of juice. Couple that with Salah having a quiet game by his standards, the subs off the bench, Marmoush and Trezeguet being ineffective when we needed a fresh spark or a fresh pair of legs, and we were always going to need a miracle. And let's not forget the context. Egypt haven't been African champions in over 15 years. Some of the players in this squad are wearing a shirt for the first time at their first World Cup, being asked to go toe-to-toe with the reigning world champions and the greatest player in history. Before this tournament, Egypt had never won a World Cup knockout match in our history, full stop. We beat Australia in the round of 32 to make history and then took the world champions to the wire in the round of 16. Egypt never won a World Cup game, never mind a knockout game before this one, I would add. But Yusuf goes on to say, a special shout out to Mustafa Schober, 8 out of 10 across every rating website. I think that's low. I thought he was better than that. Saved a messy penalty, made a point-blank stop from McAllister, tipped an Alvarez shot round the post from 6 yards. Man of the match performance, no debate. The kid is a name to remember. Big shout out to Haitham Hassan. Pronounced Haitham. Anyone reading, thank you. I enjoyed that and I need that. The kid was doing all the running Mo Salah used to do, non-stop energy, direct, fearless, and he assisted Zico's goal with a beautiful ball across the box. Imagine if we both had Haitham and a semi-prime Salah in the same team. I'll say no more. Because what actually happened? We had them on the brink. We pushed them back. We held them at bay. We scored a header in the 6-yard box. We counted again and again for 75 minutes. Egypt had the Argentinians crying tears of relief at the end. That's how hard we made them believe they were going to lose. We were always going to need a miracle to beat Messi, but I didn't think we'd need to know we were facing both Argentina and the referee. He says, look, I won't cry too much about it. We didn't lose because of the referee. But seriously, if that toe poke on Lisandro Martinez is a foul, a stupid decision in my eyes, and I know Jack will probably feel the same, then we deserve about 6 fouls and a stonewall punish out at the other end. Argentina deserve at least 3 yellows on top. Every single 50-50 tackle went their way. I know there's always an innate bias when a giant plays a minnow, but what on earth? Not once, but twice VAR didn't look at our penalty appeals. And how'd you rule out a toe poke goal after that long, brilliant run anyway? Never mind, we scored a nearly identical goal a few minutes later. Honestly, a traffic warden would have done a better job than the ref in Atlanta. How people are still divided on this one's beyond me. There's no win discussion here, I know. It is what it is. I can't overthink it anymore. He does go on to say, full credit to Argentina, though. Messi tried to do Messi things all game and eventually he got there. All 3 of their goals were good, especially that winner. But our goals were brilliant and our saves were beyond brilliant. And credit where it's due, Scaloni saved Argentina. He made the changes. Lautaro on for Depaul, Montiel on for Molina, Nico Gonzalez on for Tagliafico. All 3 of those subs directly created the comeback goals. And Lautaro really did send in the perfect cross for that Enzo winner, didn't he? That's a World Cup winning manager and a World Cup winning striker doing exactly what they're paid to do. Meanwhile, Hassan Hassan didn't make any single defensive sub to shut up shop when we were 2-0 up with 15 minutes to go. That's the difference between a manager who's won the biggest prize in the game and the one who hasn't, and it cost us. So some final numbers to sit with. Argentina had 19 shots to our 5. Messi's now the first player ever to miss 2 penalties in the same World Cup, 4 from 8 for his career at the tournament. Yasser Ibrahim's opening header was only his 2nd international goal ever. We punched miles above our weight. Hands on my head, head held high. Bye-bye World Cup journey. It was fun while it lasted. It won't be the last time we'll be back. The Egyptian crowd waiting for the team at the hotel to thank them and cheer them was more than enough to express how we all feel. You made us proud, lads. I think that's a really fair summary of all of it.
Yeah, it really is. Obviously, we've seen how the Egyptian coaching staff took the defeat and what they really thought of it. But Youssef's done well there to try to remain calm and amicable in the wake of what is a gutting moment in their football history. So well done, Yusuf. That's impressive stuff. But yeah, Messi saved from being in this letdown list, mate. When he missed 2 penalties, is he off pens now, Jack? Is that
I was thinking this. You know what? Like, you know how much I love Lionel Messi, right? I think he's the greatest player ever to play the game, etc., etc., etc. But if this was, and I did think this yesterday, if this was someone else, if this, no, I've been deeply critical of Cristiano Ronaldo taking free kicks, right? For example, just as a, to put a comparison. I'm like, obviously it's not benefiting the team. At this point, is Lionel Messi taking penalties benefiting Argentina? I think the answer is no. But also, I do take the point that if someone else takes that penalty and misses, then it's a slightly different conversation, isn't it? Because like, they're like, well, you did a ball off Messi and you missed. But I like he's for all his godlike ability, and Henry Hill tweeted this yesterday, for all his godlike ability in pretty much every other aspect of the footballing world, he's just below average at penalties. And also, that's okay. I think it's the lack of disguise. With Messi, you often can kind of tell what he's going to do. You just can't stop it, right? Like, he's not a player that puts those and those disguise on things. And I think for penalties, with when it being one-on-one, et cetera, in those areas, and look, he hits the post with a free kick about 35 yards out, 2-3 minutes after this. And you're like, how can you do that but not score from 12 yards? But I do think it's a lack of disguise on a penalty that's maybe a little bit easier to read when you don't have players in front of you. And I just think it's not necessarily part of his game.
He just shouldn't be taking them. Like, no. I think that's it now. I think most teams, like,
if they get another one, will he take it?
Like, two misses and you're done. I mean, that's usually the rule for most teams. It's like, but it's Messi.
Yeah, I was going to say, this isn't most teams.
He's got no problem with it. You know, he's like, oh, well.
I'll score again later.
Oh, well. All right, bye. Carry on. I'll score in a minute.
Do you know what's really weird? When the penalty was missed, obviously everyone was deeply frustrated, but no one was like, oh, that's that. They were just like, I score again in a minute.
They just carry on. The thing is, you can't give them you can't shout at him, can you?
No.
What do you do?
Don't upset him. It is right. Let's take a break then. We come back on the other side. We're going to talk about some of the biggest disappointments of this World Cup. Stick with us here on Ranks FC. Welcome back to Ranks FC. Here's Jack Collins and Dean Jones alongside you. And we're talking about some letdowns in this World Cup. Dean has done the ranking here, so I'm going to just pass the mic and hand the floor to Mr. Dean Jones.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to start with the biggest letdowns. We'll work our way down to some other contenders in a bit. But to start off, I mean, I think we've got to say that the biggest letdown has to be Brazil for going out at the stage they did and in the manner that they did at this World Cup. I don't think it was a complete surprise that Brazil aren't entering the semi-final stage, for instance. Like, I don't know that I ever really thought that Brazil were going to get there. I was never that fearful of facing Brazil in a quarterfinal, but to lose to Norway in the round of 16 is unexpected, is painful. And to the nation and to the legends that have played for that team in the past, it's wholly unacceptable. Now, we do have to caveat this with the fact that Brazil were a bit lucky to even make the World Cup in the manner that they did. I mean, they finished fifth in qualifying. They didn't have a good record. They got battered by Argentina at one stage. But when Brazil gets to a tournament, none of that should matter. And that's why you have Ancelotti as your manager. Ancelotti is a manager who, we've said it a million times about vibes, about getting the right blend of characters and ego and finding those moments that win. But I don't know. It was just too uncertain. There was too many factors involved that were unconvincing.
Yeah.
And it was almost like you were just waiting for, a lot of the time, Vinny to come up with something that just wasn't going to happen often enough. And I just think that the fallout from this will be hugely significant, because yes, I'm sure the pressure does weigh heavy at times of winning the World Cup so many times and having all the legends in attendance and judging you and talking about you. But that's kind of what's supposed to make you brilliant as a Brazilian. And at the moment, they haven't got the right blend of the older players in that team, the experienced ones, helping the younger ones understand what it takes to actually be a success for a Brazilian team at a major tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is interesting, because I wouldn't have necessarily had them at number one in this ranking. Like, I think this is personally where I would have put Germany.
Mate, this is the biggest letdown. Brazil going out in the last 16.
No, I think Germany going out to Paraguay in the last 32.
Germany were never any good.
Yeah, but nor were Brazil. And I think that there's a slight difference.
Germany took penalties. They didn't, you know, it's still...
The only reason that I think that this is, like, I take it, is because Brazil had every opportunity to win this game. And 0-0, obviously, Bruno Guimarães takes a dreadful penalty. They're saved, and you know, it's kind of one of those weird ones. You're like, why is Bruno Guimarães taking a penalty? And then they're like, in that team, that felt odd. And then there's obviously the Endrick chance in the second half where, you know, just a better first touch and he has to score. The excitement in the bar I was in when Endrick came up was like unbelievable. I can't tell you how excited people were. Like, there was more of a cheer for Endrick than there was for Neymar, and we get to him in a minute. But like, it was, and then he gets through on goal and it's an unbelievable pass from Vinny Jr. And you're like, what are you doing? Just take it onto your right foot or hit it first time. One of the two. You have to put that away when there's so much build up around you. And I think it's really interesting, but I think that Brazil looked all over the place for a lot of this tournament. I wasn't shocked that they lost. And I know you kind of look at the Japan game and think, okay, this thing's working in the right direction here. But like a team that was going to be, if Brazil had come up against Switzerland in that game, I would have probably expected Switzerland to win. Like, because I think that their kryptonite is a well-organized team. We saw this the first half of the Japan game, like a well-organized high press. Brazil had no answers. And in the second half, Japan, I think, started playing the shirt, not the game, right? Started playing the occasion, not the game. And they ultimately fall, and Brazil have a couple of big moments. And you're like, wow, okay, maybe Ancelotti's doing the whole raise an eyebrow and everything seems to turn out the right way again. But I'm not stunned that Brazil lost here. I was stunned that Germany lost to Paraguay. And I think that that's maybe the difference for me.
Yeah, as I say, I think because it was a penalty shootout and like the margins are so narrow in that, I just find it a bit more hard to define. And I just expect more of Brazil. I just do. So that's why I ended up going in here. We will move on to Neymar before we move on to the other teams. I think it's well known on this podcast, my thoughts and feelings on Neymar as a character within football. I've never really enjoyed his antics at all. Like, he's obviously an extremely talented footballer. I never felt that it was fully fulfilled. I thought that his behavior and his attitude in the late moments of this game was pretty pathetic. And then obviously in the wake of it, we learned that we'll be seeing, that's the last we're going to be seeing of him. And I think it's for the best, to be honest. I don't know, there'll be a lot of Brazilians out there that might be mourning about this, but good riddance as far as I'm concerned.
I think that there's two things can be true. I was always warmer on Neymar than you were. Like, I think that there was more fulfilled potential in there than people ever gave him credit for. Yeah, he didn't rise to the top of the game in the way that we hoped he might. But I think that what he achieved in the game is sometimes talked down upon when actually it's remarkable what he was able to kind of do and what he put together. You know, he's Brazil's top scorer ever. You know, he wore that shirt and there was so much pressure on him as well in terms of what he was. It's also true that he shouldn't have been in this Brazil squad. And like, he clearly wasn't physically ready to compete. I thought it was wild that Ancelotti threw him on at the moment that he did, given the fact that if that game had gone to extra time, you would have been asking him to play 60 odd minutes of a football match, which just didn't look within his capabilities. I can understand that there is like a lack of a Neymar figure, a creative hub from a central zone that, you know, hasn't necessarily worked for Brazil in recent years. And I don't think anyone stepped up to be that guy. And so I can kind of understand the clamor for Neymar to be involved in that kind of way. But I think that, you know, ultimately what we've seen here is a player who just clearly wasn't still at it, you know, physically for this level. And I think that that's what happened at the end of this game. I thought it was a wild decision. I think some of the squad selection from Ancelotti's perspective is questionable at best. And whilst I think he will go onwards and he will try to rebuild with a talented youth group, you know, I think we'll start to see some more of the younger players, you know, brought into this now. Your Andres Santos's, for example. Obviously, William Estevao was absent with injury for this one, but he's obviously an exciting prospect to bring in there as well. I think Ryan worked hard at this World Cup. We'll never really be able to fill the Rafinha shoes, but you know, they're big shoes to fill at any given moment. I'm intrigued to see what happens next, but I am with you in that I think that Neymar felt like an odd choice for this World Cup, and him coming on at that moment probably was the thing that ended up dooming Brazil.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm going to use that actually to lead us into number two, because the next letdown is Portugal, but I think more significantly, Cristiano Ronaldo's impact within that and the fact that he has to be considered a big letdown at this tournament, which is obviously not a major surprise in terms of like what we got out of him. But I think there were moments in this tournament when Ronaldo was trying to convince us that he was still himself. He's shouting, "I'm back." He's like scoring these. He scores a penalty, and he's like, "Okay, fine." But like,
he scored two very good goals against Uzbekistan. But that is really, for me, the summation of his contribution to this.
That was exactly. And ultimately, Portugal do pay the price for indulging him, as we suspected would be the case. Now, I don't necessarily blame them. Like, it's a very, 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 very hard thing to do to manage Cristiano Ronaldo, leave him out, substitute him, whatever you're going to do. Like, that is an extremely difficult task. But ultimately, that is the job of your coach, and you've got to get the best out of the team unit. And at the end of the day, that last 16 game against Spain just went on around him, didn't it? Like, he was just like a figure on the pitch, and like a few touches here and there. He throughout the tournament, I thought like the amount of times he gave the ball away was like unbelievable. He's 41 years old. It's obviously not a major surprise. And the condition he's kept himself in, absolutely unbelievable. All the rest of that, like, I'm not doubting him in the sense of like having this unbelievable work ethic and professionalism and raising the game.
That's never been in question.
No, that's never in question. The question is whether indulging him cost Portugal and meant that they were let down in the tournament. And ultimately, I think it was, because there was a possibility here that Spain could have been there for the taking. And I think that because of the makeup of their team across this fixture, it was just never going to happen.
The first half of this game was quite even, I thought, right? Like, I didn't think there was loads between them. I thought the Portugal created well down the flanks. But you're right in that it never felt like it was geared towards Ronaldo. And in the second half, he became a bit of a passenger as Spain kind of upped the ante and began to dominate. Portugal needed runs in behind. They were getting none of them. They were, you know, in those wide spaces, you're looking for someone. There's a moment right at the end of the game where Portugal are trying to attack. They're 1-0 down at this point. They're trying to attack down the flank. And Ronaldo is standing 15 yards behind the ball, you know, looking for the ball to come back to him 35 yards from goal. Why? You're looking for a goal in the last minute. Bernardo Silva is winning headers in the box. And why are you not in there with your aerial ability and presence? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever for you to be stood behind the ball 35 yards from goal when your team is desperately searching for a goal. But I think that the most important bit of this conversation is that, look, I have gone to bat for Portugal and for Cristiano Ronaldo to a degree to be like, it's very difficult to drop him when no one has stepped up to be like, I'm the man. I'm the man that's going to take on that number nine role for Portugal. You've got to give it to me. Like, that shirt is mine. Because Gonçalo Ramos has been content sitting on the bench for PSG over the last couple of years and being a super sub, right? But the truth is also Gonçalo Ramos comes on in the game against Croatia and he wins Portugal the game. He has been a super sub. He's utilized as a super sub. He said so after the game. He said, you know, if you need a goal, bring on Gonçalo. Give him a call. You're like, well, I wouldn't be necessarily casting myself as a super sub, dude. But like, you know, that's on you. And if you know that that's where you're going to have to sit within the hierarchy, then look, so be it to a degree. The great kind of shame of this is Portugal need a goal against Spain. They're great Iberian rivalries. They played well, better than they have done in recent games, I think, in this Spain game. But you're looking for a goal in the last minute and you don't bring on Gonçalo Ramos? Like, if you're not going to start him, like, look, there are merits and non-merits to that conversation. But clearly, like, he has not done enough to justify being like, I'm the starter for this team. But he has been an excellent super sub for both PSG and for Portugal. To not bring him on at the end of this game in order to, you know, not upset Cristiano, just wild, wild in so many ways. Like, if you're going to play the super sub role, you've got to let him be the super sub. And that's even worse, I think, than not giving him minutes in the first place.
Yeah, it's almost like the coach should lose his job after something like that, isn't it, Jack?
Well, that's good. I mean, look, Roberto Martinez, probably the next US manager, to be honest. So so there's that.
Do you want to go on and talk about number three, the US, Jack, or should we do it after the break?
Let's take a little break and we'll come back to the US on the other side. Welcome back to Ranks FC. Jack Collins and Dean Jones alongside you, talking about some of the big letdowns of this World Cup. And Dean, I'm here in the US, but you live here now, and the US very much in this conversation, not in terms of their World Cup campaign as a whole, but I think particularly this performance against Belgium in the biggest game of pretty much every single one of these players' careers. They have completely and utterly imploded. They have mentally collapsed. it is such an incredible disappointment that such a positive campaign that people have been looking at, that has brought neutral fans in, has brought new fans in. This was a record viewing ever for a US men's game. And the performance they put in was just one of complete terror, complete fear. And just that is going to turn, it's going to leave such a bitter taste in the mouths of long-term fans. And I am deeply concerned that it's going to turn some new fans off of this team, you know, for another 4 years.
Yeah, I hope not. It is a shame that this is the way that it's shaken out. I really hope that fans in the US continue to embrace this sport. In the commentary out here towards the end of the game, the commentator was like, this does not have to be the end of your football journey. Like, go and watch more football, go and watch your local team, go and watch MLS, whatever he was saying. And it was like, and I do agree with him on that. Like, I really hope
he would. He also, though, John Strong on the commentary also said, oh no, don't concede again, just before Lukaku scored the fourth. And I was like, that's all.
Well, it's painful for him because he's like desperate for this to work out. And when you're on the end of a 4-1
drubbing
like that, it's, I mean, it's just an embarrassing, humiliating defeat. And it's like, I think there's a problem in the sense that the US were overrated coming into the game. I do think that we, obviously, Belgium felt disrespected, right? Which we learned as soon as the game kicked off because of the way that they played. And now I think about it, I should have probably anticipated more of that. Belgium hadn't been playing particularly well, but they had been showing a way to keep themselves in games and turn things around. I think I had not taken into account enough the experience and pedigree and quality that they do have within their ranks. And the fact that they started without Doku, De Bruyne, Lukaku was a contributing factor to the way that they were able to match the energy of the US, show more energy than the US.
And really does seem got a lot right here, a lot right.
Oh, absolutely. From the very first minute, the US were on the back foot and they were being taught a lesson about international football and the levels that exist within it. So, look, Belgium did raise their game, but that doesn't mean that the US get away with this one because it is a letdown, because I don't think there was a single player on the pitch that did themselves justice. And worse than that, there were such glaring errors all over the place. And like just a lack of experience, a lack of nous, a lack of knowing what to do, what the right. Obviously, the goalkeeping error on goal three is like the ultimate example of that. Like, what on earth is he doing?
But even Chris Richards doing.
What's Tim Ream doing? What's Chris Richards doing on goal number four? Like, there's just these moments that the third goal just really wound me up because I was like, there's still over half hour to go in this game, and now it's done. Like, it didn't have to be done.
It felt like a death knell, didn't it? It felt really like the white flag.
And obviously, you know, Pulisic not turning up, Dest not having a good game, Freeman getting found out a bit. It was all very, very painful. The midfield didn't compete in the way that they have in all the other games. Everything that was good about their performance against Paraguay in the first game was equally as bad in this game against Belgium. Like, it was complete opposite of what we saw in that first game. And I'm just gutted about it for like American soccer fans. And I'm, from a personal perspective, I'm a bit disappointed, but there's just no, I mean, talk about letdowns and Brazil and Portugal. There's an argument to be made that actually letting a nation down, this could have been number one.
Yeah. I think this performance and look, this is the thing, right? Like if the US had lost to Belgium 3-2, and Belgium had scored three wonder goals, you'd be like, all right, fair enough. Like, his team left everything. Look, think about Mexico. I use Mexico as an example here because Mexico lost to England, but it was a hell of a battle. They gave everything. They stretched every sinew to find a way through that game, right? Nobody left anything in the tank in that Mexican team. And the crowd afterwards stayed around to applaud that team. They partied into the night because they know that ultimately, one, they gave England a hell of a game. And you come out of it and you're like, you know what? I'm really proud of my players, I imagine, as a Mexican fan. Really proud of what they've given this tournament. Really proud of what they gave tonight. I think that the US would have walked out of that stadium, US fan base, and gone, I'm quite proud of the way that the team have played throughout this tournament. I'm proud of elements of this team, but I'm really disappointed tonight. I feel like we have not done ourselves justice. And that leaves a bitter taste, I think, in the mouth. And ultimately, I think to your point, they froze, right? They froze in the headlights. Maybe it was the fact that this game was such a big game, that it was an opportunity to reach a World Cup quarterfinal. Maybe it was all of the noise that surrounded it, with the Balogun red card being rescinded and the political interference, which just feels like a really bad thing. The US, who had gone, and I say this, and I said this on the radio the other day, all through the tournament, my family group chat has been going off talking about this US team, being like, wow, how much fun are they to watch? Like, we really like them. And I know that there's a bit on social media where US fans or kind of people associated with this team are like, yeah, the rest of the world doesn't want us to do well. Europe is terrified. I haven't experienced that from being in the UK. Everyone I spoke to is like, how fun is this US team? Right? They're really together. The energy is amazing. They play some great football. Like, the discussion around them has been really positive. Without fail, every single person on my group chat before the US game was, I hope they get battered. I hope they get battered, because you shouldn't be interfering in this kind of way to overturn a red card. It doesn't matter if the red card's right or wrong. I don't think it's a red card. Other people do. What I do think you can say is, it's a decision you can understand. It's a decision you can justify. And when you put that in the context of, you know, does it matter if it's not a red card or not? Not really. Not really. Like, what matters? If it was the wrong person who'd been red carded, if it was a mistaken identity, I think you can argue that, yeah, okay, you need to rescind that. But FIFA's, and maybe the FIFA process needs to change so that you can appeal a red card, so there is an appeals process for it, rather than invoking an article that hasn't been used at a World Cup since 1962. Like, that feels like a different thing. That's a different conversation about whether there should be an appeals process. But look at the bureaucracy it creates, because suddenly England are, you know, suddenly out there looking at Gerald Quance's red card. They're like, yeah, why wouldn't you? France are there being like, Michael Olise shouldn't have got a yellow card against Paraguay. Yeah, of course you should. Everyone should challenge everything, because if that's the new world we inhabit, and I think it's just gone from the US being such a feel-good story. My boss out here, Pete, it was like, we've just lost all our good juju. Like, all of like the enjoyment around this team, all of the like love for it disappeared overnight in terms of the rest of the world and the way they viewed this team. Whether that played on the players' minds or not is a different conversation. But I think that they could always say, oh, we didn't really think about it, didn't really. But I think Flo Balogun going up to talk to Rudy Garcia after the game, and Garcia being like, I really appreciate they came over to me, that suggests it's at the very least on someone's mind, right? Like, it's there in the conscience.
Yeah, it's just a shame, you know, from all the scenes of country roads and the nation embracing Pochettino, and I've seen so many neutral fans jump on board and start to learn about the players, and kids start to pretend they're Flo Balogun or whatever, and it's been unbelievable. There was a quote, though, from Gio Reyna that was something like, we all had in our mind that we were definitely going to be heading to LA for a quarterfinal. I think that might be part of the problem. That's not how tournament football works. I've had that mentality before with England, and I don't have it anymore. You learn that, like, you have absolutely no privilege, no right to already be in the next round, no matter who you're facing. And when you're up against a team like Belgium, who actually, when you sit down and think about it, are better than you, like, you certainly can't have that anywhere in your psyche. So I do think that there was a sense of that must have existed. Maybe an overconfidence. Maybe they were overrated. Maybe they've been punching above their weight. So the second that they didn't perform as well as they had in previous games, and let's face it, mate, like, as good as Paraguay was, Australia rested a few players and weren't particularly good. Turkey was a dead rubber, and Bosnia have almost no goal threat. So, like, they hadn't really faced the sort of test that was going to come anywhere close to this.
I agree. But I also do think that if the US had turned up here, if they played like they played in the other games, this is a contest. Like, the fact that the disappointment comes with that there's not a contest in the end. Belgium probably have the easiest game of anyone in the round is 16. They actually look at all the score lines. Did anyone give a worse account of themselves in terms of a competition than the US did against Belgium? And as you say, I think this is a US team that, you know, if you put together a mixed Belgium-US side based on the form in this tournament, it's probably quite even, right?
Yeah.
In terms of what it is. This is a game that they needed to stand up for. This is a game that they needed to be counted. And instead, every single one of them froze. Like, as you said, there's not a player that really walks out. I said maybe Malik Tillman, who continued to try things at the very, very least. But, you know, it is one of those where you're kind of scratching at straws, right? Like, you're looking for different things that you can kind of try and take out of it. I think that there's a lot of people who feel very, very disappointed with this. And the fact that everyone didn't turn up at the same time makes me think that, you know, this, I don't think Belgium really got our second, third gear, which is the terrifying thing from the US. I think they gave up the goals. They gave up too many silly mistakes, things that we haven't seen from them this tournament. And ultimately that's led to their downfall.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I will move it on to number four, Jack. We've already kind of mentioned them already, but this is where I've got Germany. As I say, the reason they were very close, obviously, it comes down to a penalty shootout against Paraguay. And
they also have a goal disallowed that should stand. That is worth pointing out.
But, you know, they were a letdown. Beat Curaçao.
Yeah.
Played well, you know. You're like, okay, this could get interesting. Lose to Ecuador, beat Ivory Coast, and then lose on penalties to Paraguay. I mean, that's just all over the place, isn't it? And it's
the Ecuador game was a dead rubber for Germany, right?
Yeah,
so that is worth pointing out.
I think at this stage of their evolution, at a time when we're supposed to be starting to take them seriously again, that's what strikes me as such a disappointment about this. It's not like, was it Russia when they were like,
well, they were knocked down the group stage of the last two World Cups.
Yeah, Russia, I remember being just a moment when it was just like, oh my God, oh my God. And I just don't, because of what's happened to the German team since then, I'm just kind of not expecting that much from them. I know they can be a good team, but I also know that they're not a convincing team.
I would say this, and the reason that I would have them higher than you have them is because in 2024 at the Euros, I think you could make a fairly legitimate argument that Germany might have been the best team at that tournament, right? In terms of how good they were. And they ended up obviously on the wrong side of that game against Spain, which was probably game of the tournament. But I remember thinking the winner of that game probably wins this tournament. And Spain edged them. And there was obviously the controversy about the Cucurella handball and all of those different things that came into it. But I was like, why, Germany are back and this is the start of something. We're seeing something fun under Nagelsmann. They've regressed a bit since then. Obviously, the Nations League was very, very bad considering they're on home soil. But I was expecting them to step up again. And yes, there's a couple of issues. The Lennart Karl injury, I think, has affected them more than we might have expected. But like, Nagelsmann just made bad call after bad call. Like, the amount of minutes that Leroy Sané got, despite the fact that, you know, there was no real sense that Leroy Sané was ever going to be providing any threat in this tournament full stop, is wild to me. And look, it's cost him his job. You know, Jurgen Klopp looks like he's going to be the next manager of the German national team, which is exciting and fun, but like it's also kind of a weird thing to be looking at. I just thought Germany was such on a positive trajectory after those Euros. And instead, they've just come in and basically just had a diabolical tournament again. And it's back to the rebuild. Not enough leaders, too many people that not playing in the positions that they needed, not a balanced enough squad, not a solution from Nagelsmann in terms of how to get the best out of both Wirtz and Musiala in the same way that he did 2 years ago. Just so many questions about Germany.
Well, I think Klopp or whoever just needs to bring stability back to this team. Like, Germany just tries so many different things that nobody really knows what the lineup's ever going to be.
Yeah, Nagelsmann is the great tinkerer, right?
Yeah, like from one international break to another, you just didn't even know what sort of lineup you were getting. And, you know, you've got to have Musiala, Havertz, Wirtz, Kimmich as like core players and key positions that are always going to be in those roles, if that's the four that you decide, whatever. And then you define how the team is built around those sorts of players. And you just try to keep something that is somewhat permanent, because there's always so much doubt around what you're going to get. And I think that that's the problem. It's difficult to lay blame with the players when they don't even know if they're a key part of what the plans are. So, yeah, I think back to the drawing board again. A third disappointing tournament for Germany. Again, another reason why they are down the rankings for me. And to be honest, like, in fifth place, I've got the Netherlands. And it's for similar reasons, to be honest, mate. A penalty shootout defeat has left them going out of the tournament. And obviously, the timing of these games was quite key as well. It was as we got into the knockouts, and Brazil had narrowly avoided getting knocked out actually against Japan in the first game. And then obviously Germany lose their penalty shootout, and then the Netherlands lose to Morocco on penalties. in a game which I think surprised people. You know, Cody Gakpo gives them the lead in that game against Morocco pretty late on, about 20 minutes from the end. Morocco claw their way back right at the death, and then they go on to cause one of the first big upsets of this tournament. Obviously,
is this a big upset?
We're going to say, like, for the more neutral, passive world, it was considered an upset. For me and you, it wasn't really considered an upset,
man,
because I consider Morocco to be a better team. But nevertheless, this is a big letdown for Dutch football. It's led to Koeman stepping down as head coach. It leads to more investigation into why this team just cannot get going. And as you know, this is one of the fabled international teams through history, right?
Like World Cup bridesmaids.
Yeah, and we just don't see it enough that they can shine. And you know, a lot of the time I was like, okay, well, they're going to need a set piece here. They're going to need something to happen from a header or whatever. And it's like, this team should be better than that. I think as a nation, they will feel extremely let down.
Pep Guardiola to the Netherlands to finish the Johan Cruyff legacy. Who says no?
I mean, mate, how fun would that be? Like something like that.
I've been saying that I want him to go to Japan. Like, imagine Pep in charge of the Japanese national team. I just think it'd be one of the most like amazing things in the world. But I think he's probably more likely to go to the Netherlands. And then that
would be unbelievable for football.
I think what's interesting about this is that I would also have had them low, like probably about this point in the list. I think this is about right, because I wasn't expecting loads in the Netherlands. You know, you can listen back to the preview shows. I wasn't convinced by them. I remain unconvinced by Ronald Koeman as a manager. They were better than I thought they were going to be in the group stages. I thought they put together some decent performances. But I think what was weird here is that I kind of thought that Koeman might use a three at the back formation, right? For this entire World Cup, I thought that they had the pieces to maybe utilize that in the best possible way. And instead, they went with the four at the back. They went with Dumfries as a flying fullback rather than a wingback. They used Mickey van der Ven on the other side in a slightly different manner. But what I kind of looked at here was, and one of the reasons that I think I am disappointed is not because they lost to Morocco, I agree. I think are a Tibet side than the Netherlands. But actually, the way that they approached this game, because they played, you know, we want to play four at the back, we want to play front foot, we want to play three in midfield, the Netherlands way, we want to play Dutch football, 4-3-3, total football. And instead, I think that Koeman could have gone five at the back at the start and been like, okay, we're actually just going to set ourselves up. The idea that he played four at the back through the entire group stage, as soon as they got to the first difficult game, he was like, panicked, sucked five at the back in, and they effectively had no control over this game whatsoever at any given point, right? Like they never, ever felt like they were the team in the ascendancy. Even if it took a Morocco late goal to equalize, like you watch this game and one team is trying to win it. And the other one is trying to survive. And it's the Netherlands that are trying to survive. And then they go route one, long ball, Wout Weghorst, Somerville, etc. They get the goal. It's a bit scruffy. It doesn't matter. Lovely moment for Cody Gakpo. He obviously had a very, very difficult and emotional week before that. But if you look at it from the perspective of how they played, I think Koeman effectively saying, we can't compete with Morocco. We can't compete. They're too good is probably the biggest disappointment of the lot for me, because that is like, wow, you're admitting that you're an inferior football nation by the way that you have approached this game against Morocco. And I don't think the Dutch are going to have that. Well, they haven't. Koeman's gone. But like, who they appoint next has to be someone that is going to get in there and play on the front foot, because this is a talented squad and we need to be seeing more from them.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. It's a shame that we didn't see them at their best. It's not a surprise. That's why they are down where they are, but ultimately still a letdown. Before we go, just a little mention to Turkey. They've let down a huge football loving nation. Like Turks must be still so incandescent with what they saw in those first two games from this group of players and the decisions that went on around it. Like, they had every right to feel optimistic about what could be achieved in this tournament. They had every right to feel that they could top the group. But they were out after two games. It looked like they might even go out the tournament without scoring a goal. Thankfully for them, they played against the US and were able to restore some pride in that
prize
game. But it still took until the last minute to actually win that one, the last kick of the game. I just feel for Turkey because that was a huge moment that they have completely failed to take hold of.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and look, it was again, you know, trying. I didn't buy the dark horse shout. Sometimes we talk about this with Turkey, and I think it's always a little bit overplayed. But you know, at the Euros 2 years ago, there was so much fun. That fluid front three, the fact that they were all interchanging, we saw none of it, absolutely none of it. And look, it's a really, really disappointing tournament. Look, things can happen. You can lose games, etc. Games can go against you. They had the most shots without scoring before the US game. Like, I get it. And I think that Vincenzo Montella will feel a bit aggrieved that they actually kind of dominated in some stretches but couldn't find the back of the net. And ultimately, it's cost them. But yeah, you have to be able to find more. And the fact that they continued kind of pumping crosses in against Australia, against 6'4" Harry Suter, 6'7" Harry Suter, and his 2 6'4" pals, when their striker was 5'7" Kerem Aktürkoğlu, felt like a mistake to me, and still looks like a mistake now. I would add to the bottom of this list, by the way, I think Uruguay would have been really high in mine. I think that is a deeply, deeply disappointing one. And South Korea, who played really well in that first game, and then we just didn't see any more of it ever again, and it was really, really disappointing. I think the manner with which they exited the tournament, I would have them both in this conversation as well.
Yeah, that's a fair shout, mate. I'm just glad I'm not talking about England, to be honest, mate. They have surprised me in a completely different way because we've come through the Battle of the Azteca with our heads held high, unbelievably proud of that performance. As I said on the Patreon, like when you're ranking great England performances of a lifetime, like that is right up there. And now it's all about making sure it wasn't a one-off. And I don't know. I don't know how we follow that performance
up. I was going to ask you this, right? Because like we talk about letdowns, etc. I'm kind of this. If England run into this game against Norway, right, and they're just shattered from the exertion of the last game, and they end up losing that game, not getting bad, like losing 1-0, you're obviously going to be disappointed. But I don't know if they still. I still don't think I would put them into a letdowns category.
Yeah, no, I don't think letdowns category. No, I mean, This is a strange game. It's a game for England in which you're at risk of underestimating what you're up against. They absolutely cannot afford to do that. Erling Haaland is in predator mode. He is absolutely...
The video of him prowling before scoring the header against Gabriel is unbelievable.
It's brilliant. I love seeing the wider world like start to grasp onto what he is like.
He's so likable at the moment. Like he came into England as like a pretty like gruff, grumpy dude. Do you remember his interviews where he'd be like one word and just stand there staring at the interviewer? And now he's there just like cracking jokes and like smiling. His personality shift is wild.
It really is. My Taylor's sister was texting me about this the other day. She's like mid-20s, living in New Jersey, like doesn't know anything about football, right? But she's watching the World Cup. And she's like, this guy Haaland has absolutely got my attention. Tell me some stuff about him because I cannot get enough of watching him. I was like, oh, funny, because Taylor loves watching Haaland too. And she's watched a few documentaries on him because she's just captivated by how he looks after himself, what his mindset is, how robotic he is, how funny he can be. Like he's got so many sides to his personality, both on and off the pitch. And obviously I'm a bit scared of him. Of course, England should beat Norway, mate. But this is what the World Cup's about. You know, Congo was hard. Mexico was hard. Norway's going to be hard.
Erling Haaland playing against the country of his birth as well. Really, yeah, really interesting.
Are you going to be there?
I am going to be there. I'm going to be there in Miami, in this stadium, to see how it all unfolds. So, yeah, I'm really, really excited.
Like, I'll send you an England shirt to wear, mate.
Maybe not after the amount of curses I've put on.
That's true, actually. Yeah, stick a Norway shirt on, no worries at all.
What's funny is that I didn't think Norway would be in this semi in the quarterfinal. I do actually have a Norway shirt at home. Like I've got the old light blue one with Steph Johansson on the back, but it's not with me. So I'll be in no colours at the weekend. So
wow.
We'll see how we go.
Wanks FC shirt?
Yeah, I've got my Rags FC hoodie, but I think it might be a bit hot for that, right?
Yeah, maybe.
So, we will see. And on that bombshell, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day. So all it's left for me to do, say thank you very, very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been the Ranks FC Football Podcast. We'd love for you to send this podcast to someone else who doesn't listen to Ranks and get them involved. We're trying to grow the community, trying to build out. We need your help to make that happen. So we'd love, if you've enjoyed this episode, to send this to someone who might enjoy it as well, and see if we can add some more bodies to the Ranks family. We love it so much how much you all, you know, speak to us, talk to us, discuss the podcast with us. It does mean the world. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all very, very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.